This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome to the Place to Be Nation reaction show. This is for the Ring of Honor 13th anniversary show from Las Vegas, Nevada. And on the line, I got my buddy Chris Zellner, who does the DVDVR Lucha Reports every week. We got Dylan Hells, who does the Wrestling Culture podcast and is actually doing a review of the show at Voices of Wrestling. So go check that out. And our buddy Pete from the Titans was going to join us, but he wasn't able to watch the show on time. So it's just going to be us three guys tonight, fellas. And, you know, let's jump in. First, I have to say, on the pre-show, they were showing ODB Briscoe's training video. That was the greatest thing I've ever seen, man. I mean, that's the way you do a vignette.
Look, the Briscoes are the best thing in pro wrestling. I mean, they're the single best act in pro wrestling. And, you know, anytime they do vignettes with the Briscoes, they did a whole episode of ROH TV about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, that was just basically them following around the Briscoes. And, you know, in theory, you hear that and you think, this is going to be stupid. Why aren't we getting matches or whatever? It ended up being, you know, tremendous. Yeah,
Mark Briscoe. Like the most entertaining wrestling program of all time.
Yeah. You got Mark Briscoe talking about how he thinks he could survive jumping off the Delaware Gap Bridge. All you have to do is just pencil out. And Jay's like rolling his eyes and like calling him an idiot. It's got clips of them on the farm, like doing dumb. I mean, they're just, they are. You know, I made this, analogy or this point on Twitter the other day. Basically, what the Briscoes are is if PG-13 had gotten locked up for stealing hubcaps in the early 90s and then forced to join the Aryan Nations to survive in prison and shank somebody and spent 6 months in solitary confinement and then finished out their 5-year prison sentences, when they got out, they would be the Briscoes. That's basically what the Briscoes are. They are grown-up, psychotic, PG-13. And, anytime they do vignettes with them, they're completely awesome. Hey, and those ODB vignettes were great.
I was going to say, ODB, she brought it, man. She felt like she could be a Briscoe on this
one. Totally.
For sure, man. Like, and, hey, guys, before we get Chris's take on it, hold on, man. I'm just going to introduce you. God damn it, I was going to give him a cool introduction and everything. He fucks it all up.
Is this a mystery guest?
It was going to be, but then he had to go, hello? Fucking Musgrave, fucking Canadian.
Oh!
Anyway, we're joined by the other Wrestling Culture host, Dave Musgrave. He's going to jump in on this reaction show with us. So, Dave, we were just commenting on the Briscoe's ODB vignette that was on that pregame show.
Yeah, I didn't watch the pregame show. I caught everything else, but I miss a joyous occasion?
It was one of the best things this year in wrestling.
It was great.
All right, Chris, what'd you think about it?
Well, see, I saw the TV show from last night, which had part of that on there, and the scene where Papa Briscoe's riding the lawnmower and he's toasting beers with ODB is so great. I mean, and you know the box jump, the jumping on the the track there, and it is classic stuff, man. The Briscoes are awesome. And, you know, Dylan, you know, you talk about PG-13. If we never knew about Papa Briscoe, how great would Jamie Dundee be as, like, the Briscoe's father?
Oh, man, that is too awesome.
At least the wacky uncle.
So, yeah, that's classic stuff. Also, in that pregame show, it was funny watching, what's Larry's last name? The black guy?
Larry Mercer.
Larry Mercer tried to keep his face from not looking at Mandy Leon's breast.
I do think Larry the Black Guy is a much better wrestling name.
These views on this show, no way reflect those.
And he does look like DMC from Run DMC's emaciated cousin.
Oh, shit. All right, let's move on to the show proper, guys. We're going to have plenty of chance to talk about the Briscoes tonight, and ODB, for that matter, and the Larry the Black Guy. But anyway, opening match on the show, Matt Sydal, the former Evan Bourne, and versus Cedric Alexander. And Dylan, what'd you think about this here, buddy?
I'm a big fan of both of these guys. I mean, I thought Sydal in WWE was great. I thought he was tremendous for, you know, every up until the point when they quit using him. Cedric is a guy who I'm a huge fan of, partially because I have a regional bias, because he's one of the few Carolina indie guys who's really broken out. And he's a guy I got to see a lot in this area before he broke out. Having said that, I actually thought this match was kind of disappointing. I wouldn't call it bad. You know, I thought it was decent, you know, above average, and a solid enough opener. But it didn't get a ton of time. Not that it necessarily needed more time, but they sort of, like, they went, at first they teased it was going to be a spot fest. Then Sydal worked the leg for no real reason, and then they decided to go back to sort of being a spot fest. And I just feel like if you're going to have a match this quick that's in that opener spot on the show between two guys that can fly and have a lot of big, impactful offense, there's no point in even pretending it's anything other than the crazy sort of go match. It was solid. It wasn't bad, but it was a little bit disappointing to me. And I guess they're going to turn Cedric heel, which I'm fine with. But I think he's got a lot of potential. You know, I think he's somebody that could eventually hold the Ring of Honor title, to be honest with you. And I'm not sure that a heel turn really helps him or plays to his strength. So I'm on the fence about whether or not that's a good thing for him at this stage. Obviously, it's too early to say. But, you know, whatever. It was a little disappointing to me to overall.
Okay. What did you think about this, Chris?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Dylan on this. You know, I just saw the Sydal Delirious match from Atlanta last week, and I thought that match was better than this one. You know, with Sydal and Delirious, of course, you know, have a long history together, and, you know, that plays a role in this. But I think, yeah, this match had, like Dylan said, it had mat work when it really didn't need it. You know, it was, like, unnecessary, and there were other matches on the show that had that problem as well. But, yes, obviously the story of this is Cedric, you know, is building for the heel turn and stuff. And I think it might do good for him to do that, to kind of freshen him up, because, I mean, they're basically saying that where he's at right now, he's at this crossroads of his career and blah, 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 blah. So they're getting it all set up. But, yeah, I mean, the match was fine, but, yeah, I was hoping. Although I did like Cedric Alexander stealing Roderick Strong's finisher and using it as a near fall spot when Strong would use it later on as the finish.
Oh, that was great.
There, you know what? There was a lot of that on this show.
You had
O'Reilly doing the arm. I mean, there was that was a theme of guys doing similar spots. But yeah, that was odd.
What about you, Dave?
I thought I liked it as an opener. I definitely agree with what Dylan said about Cedric Alexander and where he should be in Ring of Honor. I really think it should have happened a little more so last year, and I actually will put some of the blame on a guy that everyone here knows I'm a fan of, or have been a fan of, Michael Elgin, that he just didn't, you know, when he had a chance to kind of elevate him a bit in a title match, he didn't do it. And, you know, I think he should be in a better position in the company. He should be wrestling for their world title at some point. Just they haven't really kind of followed through with it. And one of the problems is that it takes a long time to climb in Ring of Honor the past few years. And that's just, I guess, where they're at. They want to have guys in for the long haul. Okay. This match, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Sydal's been fun in everything I've seen him in since he returned to the Indies. And, this is a good example of an actual straight-up match they did in the show. I do think there's too much outside interference in the matches right now.
We're going to talk about outside interference.
Yeah, it was nice to see the lack of it here.
So. Yeah, you know what? I'm actually going to kind of agree with that. Is that as an opener, I thought it was fine, man. I know you're complaining about mat work. I tell you what I did like about this. You know, after Cedric hit a drop kick early on to Sydal's face, did you notice how he started going after the face, like using the elbow to pop his nose?
Yeah, that punches, was fine. I think.
And the punches. Yeah. Like, I really liked that part of the match. I wish they kind of would have built the entire match around that theme of him basically, you know, trying to draw blood when you know no blood was going to be drawn, you know? But having said that, as a opener, the crowd was into it. It was fun. Solid match, but like you said, nothing great, nothing blow away. So, but if you're a big fan of both guys and you were expecting kind of like one of those classic, like from 2004 ROH open and steal the show matches, not even close, right? So,
yeah.
Right. Well, let's
move on. One thing you can say with Sydal is he's good at treating guys like someone like Alexander like an equal.
Yeah. Well, it's easy when you're that size, too. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's always easy when you're that size to let someone else get over on you. But moving on, let's go to our next match. First Briscoe of the night, Mark Briscoe versus Moose. Chris, talk to me.
Moose is a guy who I'm really high on right now. He is improving leaps and bounds over where he was when he started. And Mark Briscoe was a great opponent for him to have on this show because it's a legitimate opponent. And somebody that'll definitely make him look good. Although I will say this, this may be a theme, but I did think the ACH match last week was better than this one. Even with that, though, Mark had a great performance here. Moose, man, that drop kick.
Okay, hold on. Just don't speak in random phrases here, Chris. You have to explain the drop kick. I know what you're talking about. But explain to the crowd what happened with that dropkick.
I was about to say, the dropkick, when he had Mark Briscoe on the top rope, on the turnbuckle, and he does the Okada standing dropkick, to the top. The guy Moose's size, 6'5", 300 pounds, doing that is impressive as shit.
Hit him square, too.
Man. I mean, just perfect. I've seen a lot of people that don't like his spear, where he does the flip with it. I think it's pretty cool, actually, though. I mean, it's kind of different. Because, everybody normally hits the spear to hit straight on. But when he does that flip, it gives it more impact, I think.
Hey, remind me of a guy stealing the spear later on when we get to that ACH match. Anyway, Dave, what'd you think, bud?
I really like Moose. I got to see him live in the summer when he joined forces with Artie Evans, and that he was a lot of fun on that show. Drop kick was just tremendous. It's like that's a highlight reel thing. If they did the ECW highlight reel opening like the back in the old White Zombie days, that would be great to have that.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was interesting is they showed the clips of him. Doing the spear and just really hitting it really crisply. And that's one thing he didn't really hit that well in this match, but he's a talent that I'm really glad he's here and not in WWE developmental. Cause God knows he'd be the next Ezekiel Jackson there. And they can do something cool with him here. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. What about you, Dylan?
Well, I was going to mention this later when we got to Jay Lethal, but I'll mention it now, which is what does it say about, WWE and TNA and the sort of corporate liberal mentality of the way these companies are run with their sort of anti-bullying campaigns and their sort of standardized PC rhetoric that they don't really follow through on when they book black wrestlers the way they book them. And ROH has a roster full of them that they present as wrestlers and stars that are completely independent of their race who just happen to be black. I just think the way it's insane to me that the right wing media conglomerate owned company portrays black wrestlers so much better and has such a large number of them and puts them all over the card in such strong ways compared to the way WWE does. And I think watching this show and watching the Atlanta show the other day, it's really apparent. I know that's a side note, but it's significant because when you do compare Moose to Titus O'Neil, they're very similar guys. Football background, really big, physical, charismatic, and there's really no reason that Titus shouldn't be pushing the WWE.
Well, here's the difference. Here's the difference is that your right-wing hack who's running Sinclair isn't involved in the wrestling product.
You're
where,
right.
Where your right-wing hacks that are running WWE and TNA are all over the blueprints of that.
You're right, and it's completely insane. Like, it's just nuts to me that they can't see, because this show really, it really it just illustrates that very well, I think. Because, you know, all those guys were presented well. This match...
No, that's true. It's like not one of these guys. Not like Moose. I didn't look at him as like your token black guy. I looked at, holy shit, that dude is towering over Briscoe. And really, it almost felt like a squash of Briscoe. And Briscoe's like a main event caliber level player.
Well, see, I thought it was a genius use of him. I thought it was a genius use of Mark Briscoe because... He's not really a main eventer on his own, but the Briscoes are a main event.
Right. But I'm saying he's a caliber.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really hurt Mark.
And he's a traditional name to put him over on the anniversary show too.
That's right. Absolutely. He has the lineage and the promotion. So like Mark, it doesn't hurt Mark because Mark's gonna stay over. He's one of the most charismatic guys in wrestling. Frankly, he and he's a tremendous worker. I think one of the most underrated workers in wrestling. He's gonna stay over. Moose needed the win, and it needed to be a decisive win. Mark got some offense in, but ultimately, it was really basically an extended squash. I thought it was a really well put together match. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that's going to show up on anybody's match of the year list or anything like that. But in terms of how it was put together, and and whether or not it achieved its goal, it was put together very well, and it absolutely achieved its goal because Moose comes out looking like a bigger star than he did coming in, and to me, this guy, I'm not saying that, you put him in main events right this second, but he's very Rusev-esque in the sense that he feels like a bigger star every time you see him.
Well, I tell you what, after tonight's main event, no, please put him in there. Put anyone else in there. Anyway, we're ruining it. But no, I agree with you. And, I actually mentioned this, that he felt like Sid and important. So I'm not saying he was like Sid, but like you remember when you first saw Sid and you were like, oh shit, and the crowd kind of reacted to him that way? He had that kind of reaction to him.
I can totally see that.
And Dylan's point about the portrayal of the black wrestlers, it's refreshing to watch guys that they don't have the stereotypical gimmicks, the shucking and jiving or the New Day type gimmicks or stuff like that. To see them presented as just wrestlers with just it's not there because of their color, they're there because they're who they are as performers. It is refreshing to see.
Right. Well, like I said, that's what happens when you have your right wing hack not involved in the wrestling product. Anyway,
they might actually be doing better at that right now than any company I can think of.
Without a doubt.
Doing better than that than any company I can think of ever in the history of wrestling.
Pretty much.
It's only going to get more pronounced too as Alberto shows up later on in the show. Yeah, and then we got Samoa Joe coming out, and Rey Mysterio. I know he's going to AAA. Doesn't mean it's out of the question that we might see a ROH shot here.
Not going to happen.
Because of the money, you think?
Because Lucha Underground.
Yeah, not going to happen. I would love to see it, but I don't think there's. I'd say less than 5% chance.
Okay, but it's still better than no chance. But anyway, let's move on to the next match. And this was the Kingdom of Matt Taven and Michael Bennett versus the Addiction. Oh man, these freaking tag team names are killing me. Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. What did they used to be when they were in TNA?
Bad influence.
Okay, this is just as bad. All right. versus the Bullet Club of Carl Machine Gun Anderson and Carl Machine Gun Anderson. So, no Doc Gallows. People said he got stuck in Detroit because of the bad weather. So, he comes out here on his own. Dave, did that affect your enjoyment of this match? What did you think of this match?
I thought it was pretty fun. It was really weird psychology because it did feel like just a tag match that he came into once in a while. But I would have liked to have seen Doc Gallows, but all in all, it was pretty fun. I liked the Kingdom.
Okay. Dylan, I know you really thought it was Bush League that they didn't replace Gallows. Expand on that.
I just thought it was lazy because, I mean, the whole Bullet Club gimmick is basically like they're a parody or a lame tribute to the NWO and the sort of like 90s supergroups. That's kind of the whole point.
Strength in numbers.
Which means they could bring in any scrub they wanted for like a one night Bullet Club gimmick. I mean, you know, I wrote some of these jokey things in my voicesofwrestling.com review, which will be up by the time this podcast is up, you know, but I mean, seriously, they couldn't bring in Jesse Hernandez or one of the old AWA showboat jobbers.
Well, you know, they
put him in the Vincent role. I mean, I'm joking.
I actually would have preferred they had someone in there. Yeah.
And yeah, they've already done it, but only kind of.
ACH already wore a Bullet Club shirt on TV.
I know. And it's like but see, the thing is, they didn't even have to use, like, they literally could have used any random guy that was semi-local and thrown it. To me, it's just, it makes the company look.
And then when he loses the match, Carl Anderson beats the crap out of him.
It just it makes the company look second tier. It does.
Japan, anyway. Yeah.
To really any.
Hold on. I kind of want to argue this point, only in the sense that I don't mind that they put Anderson in, because, you know, he was advertised, right?
Sure.
And Gallows couldn't. What I didn't like is that there was nothing leading up, not a promo, not an announcement to the live crowd, nothing leading up to him fighting on his own. You know what I mean? No little angle like that, to me, was the lazy part.
I mean, it would have been better if they had done something. I agree with you. You probably could have made a reasonable way, you know, a more reasonable argument. To me, it comes across as Bush League to do this the way they did it. And, you know, there's Ring of Honor, I don't know if they really care about coming across as a bigger promotion than they currently do. But if they do, that kind of stuff hurts.
Yeah,
because it just makes them look sick. The match itself, I mean, it was okay. It was fine for what it was. I like the Kingdom myself. I think they're a good group. I really like Bennett. I enjoyed Taven for what he does. But I'm glad that they're giving those guys a push, because they absolutely are. And of course, New Japan supposedly is really interested in those guys too. So that probably has a lot to do with all this. But the other big theme on this, though, that I think is worth mentioning is, you know, the Bullet Club were the biggest baby faces on the show. And it wasn't just because they got the biggest baby face reaction. They were booked that way. They sent Anderson out there by himself. They did, you know, heat sections on the hot tag on the Young Bucks in that match. AJ did a respect to handshake with ACH. I mean, the Bullet Club were presented like a baby face faction, not a heel faction. And that is interesting leading into the shows that they're doing with Ring of Honor and New Japan coming up.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting point. Chris, what did you think of the match?
I will be at for both of them, by the way.
We'll talk about upcoming ROH shows, by the way. But Chris, what did you think?
Well, I'll tell you the reason why the Bullet Club's being, you know, booked like they are is they push merchandise, man. I mean, there's so many Bullet Club shirts at that show in Atlanta last week, and people were buying them up. I mean, they're over. I mean, it's not a Young Bucks joke. I mean, they are over. So, I could definitely see why, you know, they're portrayed as baby faces on these shows, even though they are who they are.
Maybe do the heels in Japan, faces in America gimmick, you know?
That'd be cool shit. And the New Japan guys, I guess, play heel or whatever when they come over here. If you know, although they probably, you know.
There might not be any New Japan guys coming over here. It might be the Bullet Club as New Japan guys.
Yeah.
But they're going to match. Whoever's idea it was to let the Kingdom and the Addiction both wear almost the same exact tights.
Oh man, I picked up on that too. What
was
I got lost for a minute? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that was kind of weird there. But yeah, I like the Kingdom too. I mean, Taven and Bennett have definitely improved the team, and they do a really good job to get doing their double team spots. Taven's a guy that definitely has improved over the past couple of years. And, yeah, New Japan's interest in them is mainly because of Maria, but they like Mike Bennett, too. So, and Taven is along for the ride, so that helps him.
And they had the spot in the tag league there back in December, so.
Yeah. But
yeah, they did good with it, by the way. I watched all those shows, and they were one of the more refreshing things about those shows.
Yeah.
And I will say it was refreshing that Anderson was the one who got pinned, because even if you don't like Gallows being there – well, the guy with the partner, without the partner, lost.
That I agree with.
So, and from a booking sense, all the way from the first three matches, from a booking sense, heads and shoulders far and away better than the WWE pay-per-view we watched last week.
But, you know, they could have done a six-man here, you know, because basically Carl Anderson was playing friends with the Addiction anyway throughout almost the entire match. So that, you know, the way they could have got around the whole situation was add another guy to the Kingdom, have a six man, you know, instead of doing what they did, which I agree with Dylan. They could have, if they were going to do it like this, they could have found somebody.
Yeah, like,
just put somebody in there.
As the show's going on, now we got two, I don't want to call them ROH originals, but like two guys who have been in ROH on and off for over a decade. BJ Whitmer versus Roderick Strong in a grudge match. I'm going to be honest with y'all, man. Early on, this did not feel very grudge match-like. And Dylan, what are your thoughts on this here?
Well, first of all, this match never had a chance because BJ Whitmer's not over. And Roddy can be over depending on where he's working. And look, Roger Strong is the best now that he's been in probably like 2-3 years, or longer. But this match had no chance. If the bottom line is, if you're going to book these guys on a show like this, the best chance they would have had, and oddly enough, the way the show was set up, they could have gotten away with this because there was no other match like this on the show, really, other than maybe the main event. It should have been a gimmick match. They should have let them do a street fight or something.
Street fight? No, when I hear grudge match, I want to see brawling through the crowd.
Yeah, and honestly, that would have played to Whitmer's strengths to the extent that he has any strengths, and Strong's fine in street fights, so. It wasn't bad. I didn't think it was a bad match, but it was completely heatless other than the finish. And, you know, I don't know what the point of it was, really. It just felt like wasted time because, like you said, there was nothing that was really grudgy about it. And it didn't feel like this was a feud that even mattered at the end of it. You know,
or that these guys were ROH legends. I mean, like I said, these are both guys that kind of have been there through like peaks of ROH, and we've seen BJ Whitmer have awesome bloody fights before.
This was basically the Divas match on the show.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's basically what it was. Seriously, this was basically the match where, you know, they sent a couple people out there who had no chance because of the way the booking was set up and aren't necessarily over anyway, particularly in the case of Whitmer, and they sent him out there and they gave him not enough time in either, for that matter, and they just, you know, they just had no chance. So I didn't think it was bad, but I, you know, what are you going to do? Some things aren't going to get a reaction, right. And this was one of them.
Yeah, Chris, what were your thoughts?
I thought the highlight of the match was the commentary. Jimmy Jacobs and Carino were really good in this match, putting over the guys in the match and the history and everything that was going on. I thought that was really good stuff. And on a night where commentary was shaky at best, there was a lot of bad moments on commentary. I thought that was definitely the best part of the match. But the match itself, yeah, Strong has definitely had a good year or two, like Dylan said. And he was really good on the Atlanta show against Kyle O'Reilly, which Kyle O'Reilly is awesome.
Well, I had heard Dylan say that before about Roderick Strong. And he's never been one of my favorites. But like I said, when I heard BJ Whitmer grudge match, I'm thinking, ooh, they might get nasty in this.
Yeah, this definitely needed brawling, and blood would definitely have helped here. And it ain't like, you know, Whitmer is scared to the blade or anything. So, it definitely lacked the heat you would want from a match that was pushed to this style. And another thing that I thought it was hilarious was there are people on Twitter talking about how ROH needs to be the people need to take legal action against them for letting somebody in BJ Whitmer's condition wrestle.
what's wrong with BJ Whitmer?
The neck. His neck deal.
I don't know what's wrong with it.
It's in pretty bad shape, Chris, because he had that bad injury after the Thunder match.
I think it's one, I mean, they really don't talk about this that much, but I think it's one of those deals where, you know, if he hits wrong, he's going to be screwed.
So it's like an Edge or Misawa type deal.
Maybe not as serious as Edge, but yeah.
Okay. What'd you think, Dave?
It was whatever. I mean, I like both guys. I really think they could do some fun stuff with Roderick. I really don't think this is it. This guy does more face and heel turns than freaking Randy Orton, for God's sake. and he's got a very similar position with the company.
Right.
but he really could be in a position to get young guys over. You know, like if they want to know how to do that, they should watch the matches that guys like Danielson and Joe were having with Strong in 2006, 2005 and 2006 to get him to the next level. And I think he did have a match with Alexander last year like that. He could have it with ACH and, you know, Adam Page and guys, which he did that one as well. But this isn't where he should be working.
Okay. Well, let's move on because the show's selling by and these matches are selling by. And now we get to our sports entertainment match. You know, we talk about Divas matches, but this felt more like Vince versus Hogan than it did Paige versus Emma or something. You know, this is a Maria Kanellis with Michael Bennett versus ODB with Mark Briscoe out there. I mean, I'll tell you what, the crowd was into this one. Chris, what'd you think?
I love the start of the match when Maria was talking about that she was pregnant, and I immediately sarcastically tweeted out, "Worst promotional tactic of 2015? ? Already." I thought that was cute. But the hardest work in this match was Mike Bennett. I mean, that dude was all over the place, you know, hitting Maria, taking bumps, taking shots from Mark Briscoe. I mean, he was all over the ring. But, yeah, it was a total, you know, ODB-type match. You know, I love the Doomsday Device was fun. I will say that.
Just throw back to Papa Briscoe, man.
Yeah, that was a total callback. Maria, she tried here. And
I don't think she was supposed to be a great wrestler. She was even like, "Look, I'm not a wrestler. I'm a manager.
I'm surprised she took that fallaway slam into the railing like she did. I mean, because ODB was not
the second one of the night, I might add.
Yeah, definitely overkill starting. But yeah, I'm surprised she took that spot. Oh, so yeah. I'll give him credit for having an entertaining match. It was what it was.
Yeah, Dave.
I thought the promo she cut that they showed backstage of her before the match was really good until they went into some stock synthesizer music. I also, when they did the tail of the tape on this one and I saw that ODB has been wrestling since 2001, I was horrified at the concept. That being said, these guys, I mean, they have their history going back to OVW. I'm surprised that wasn't played on more, but you know, it was dumb and harmless is basically what this match
dumb
was.
Dumb and harmless. Dylan.
Yeah.
I was really entertained by this.
Yep.
You know, this is not the kind of match that lends itself to star ratings or all that sort of thing because it's not really intended to be viewed in that context. Yeah. So if you're looking at it from a snowflake perspective, it is what it is. But I thought it was really well done. I thought the pre-match promo Maria's a tremendously great wrestling personality.
Definitely,
she's a very good manager. She's a great heel. She knows
the best
how to
women
get
in the business. I think
I totally agree with that. She knows how to get heat. She facial expressions are great. I mean, she's really underrated at what she does. And this really, I mean, it could have been a disaster, but because of the fact that they added so many bells and whistles and, you know, smoke and mirrors and all that stuff, because of that, it actually ended up being pretty entertaining.
They had a lot
of crazy spots. Some of them were a little bit contrived, but whatever, you know. And, you know, I agree with Chris's point about Mike Bennett. Mark Briscoe was out there. He was busting his ass too. You know, I thought it was hilarious that Maria kicked out of Bennett's super kick.
Yes, it killed his move.
That was pretty funny. You know, the only thing I thought this was lacking is I was really hoping in the post match that ODB would get on the mic and announce she was pregnant with Mark's baby, and then they'd have an irresponsible beer bash afterward with like pregnant ODB getting shit faced drunk. As the segment faded to black, but other than that, I thought this was really entertaining.
And then it's found out it's really Papa Briscoe's child.
Oh God!
But yeah. ODB stands for overdue baby.
We did get the payoff though of her ripping up the pink stuff off the belt.
Yes.
So I mean this segment was better than the segment before it, no doubt.
Oh, for sure. And
Carino was really funny in commentary with the shenanigans at the beginning too, where she announced she was pregnant.
Yeah,
where she took off her shirt and he said she was really hot for a pregnant chick.
It's hilarious. Well, let's move on, man. And now I'm going to say that the next match is the first match on this show that felt kind of like a big deal, like a big match, you know, kind of a main event caliber match. And that's AJ Styles versus ACH. Dave, thoughts?
Could have been really the best match in the show in a lot of ways. One of the things that I sent in my comments on it to the Observer, one of the things that I really think this whole show with the outside interference that we mentioned earlier, this is the kind of match that they should be patterning for their world title matches in order to really seem like something different, because there's plenty of shenanigans all over WWE's like 8 hours of original footage every week,
yeah,
plus all the WWE Network stuff. So if people want that, there's plenty of it. They should really be going for the old sports type presentation that they used to have. And it's different owners now than it was then, so maybe they don't quite realize that's what they did. But I really think that's what they should be going for, and this match is a great example of it.
I really like this match, but I really like matches like this. This was a match. I think some people will probably be disappointed by this because I think there may have been an expectation by some people that this, should have been a match of the year candidate or could have been a match of the year candidate. I'm actually glad they didn't work it that way. I like the fact that they established that ACH was not really on AJ's level, in the sense that AJ was clearly the better wrestler, the veteran, the craftier. He was stopping a lot of ACH's spots in their tracks early. I thought that was a cool thing to establish early on. And also that meant when ACH did get his spots in, they felt like bigger deals. The match was hurt a little by the fact that you never really thought ACH had a chance to win.
Never.
That I think probably hurts it a little bit. But what I would say is, I've seen some people complain about AJ Styles, about, the use of some of these part-timers like Patron, AJ Styles. I'm glad they don't put these guys against their main eventers. Because if they're going to have to take falls over people, they don't necessarily always have to, but AJ does, because in New Japan's not going to allow him to drop a fall to ACH, let's be honest. If they're not going to be able to get, to do jobs, clean jobs, I would rather them have matches like this, because I actually think ACH came out of this looking better than he did coming in,
I agree.
Was he presented as the equal to Styles? No, but I don't think he should have been, To me, this was kind of like a Bret Hart versus 1-2-3 Kid match from 1994,
is not an indictment on the match at all.
No. Not at that level. It wasn't as good as that match. But it was a similar sort of structure to the match. I really loved the finish, too. I thought it was absolutely great that ACH goes for this 450 that he doesn't really need to do. It's like he's already got Styles down. Instead of going for the pin, he goes for the 450. Sure enough, he misses it. AJ locks on the calf killer. You think that's going to be the finish? No. He is able to escape, but then he gets killed with the Styles combo. I really love the fact that AJ always hits people with two moves when he has that definitive finish. Like, nope, you're not getting
that. Definitive, absolutely.
Yes. You're not. You might be able to escape one thing, but if I string a couple things together, you got no shot in hell. And to me, this was a really good match. Not quite a truly great match, but I'm actually, in a weird way, I'm actually glad it wasn't, because where it was on the card, I thought it really was perfect in serving its purpose.
It was what it should be.
Absolutely. The only thing that makes this it a little bit disappointing that this wasn't slightly better than it was that the main event sucked so bad. But if the main event had delivered, I think this would have been almost the perfect way to book a match like this.
Right. And you kind of wish they would have just gone all match of the year out on you because of the way the main event ended up.
Yes, but we didn't know that, and they didn't know that.
Yeah, for sure.
And people can complain about part-timers coming in like AJ. People should realize how much AJ Styles is really, if not one of the best wrestlers in the world right now.
Absolutely.
What a privilege it is to be able to watch him.
Compare the Ring of Honor part-timers and the way they're used to the way the WWE part-timers are used. I mean, the Ring of Honor part-timers are used the way they should be used, and we'll get to that in the TV title match. But
right. Well, and something I noticed, too, and we're going to get your opinion in a second, Chris, is that up to this point, every match felt different or like had a different purpose or goal, or you know what I mean? It felt like the show was building, you know what I mean? Kind of like, you know, sometimes when you watch a WWE show, it just feels random, or they wrestle the same match and matches 1, 2, and 3. And this one, it really felt different. Like the first match was kind of like your hot opener, guys doing a bunch. Then you had your three-way tag match. Then you had your, I guess it was supposed to be your veterans grudge match. But didn't turn out that way. Then you had your sports entertainment match leading into, you know, like I would call it like main event style match. So up to this point, the card is just building. And I really love those ACH flash pins. You know, he does that complete shot where he's coming in through the ropes. And then we talked about the spear, and instead of just flipping over, he actually flips his spear into a pin, which I thought was really cool too. Chris, what'd you think?
Yeah, ACH is so good at flash offense and flash defense. He takes moves as good as anybody does right now, I think. He is so good at taking somebody's offense. Whether it was that when he got those head spots, you know, AJ killed him with a drop kick, and then the neck breaker. I mean, it looked sick. And his offense, I mean, the fisherman's bomb was crazy. And that the twist and tope, you know, he did that last week. That is such an impressive spot, man, when he does that. I mean, that is just craziness. But, yeah, this match, if it wasn't the best match on the show, it's the second best match on the show.
That was the best match.
I mean,
it was the best match on the show.
It was really, really good. And I want to ask Dylan, which match do you think was better, the Bish match or this match for Styles?
Hold on. Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say
The Fish match from Atlanta.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because for those who don't know, Chris is referring to the Atlanta show he went to, which was had a Styles versus Bobby Fish match. I thought this match was a little bit better than the Styles versus Bobby Fish match, to be honest.
And I'll agree. I actually agree with you.
But they were both really good. I mean, Styles. What Dave said is dead on. I mean, he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. I don't know if he's the very best, but he's in the conversation, you know. And one of the things he's really good at, I think, is he's really good at wrestling basically a hierarchical way of wrestling. I mean, you don't see that a lot in the United States. And he's very good at doing that. And a big part of that is those definitive finishes that you get out of these Styles matches. You know, these guys might hang with him for a while, but at the end of the day, he's going to give you the kill shot, and you are not kicking out. There ain't going to be a string of 87 near falls on an AJ Styles match if they're not needed. It's not going to happen.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. That's really, really refreshing.
And we really saw that. Was that on the Naito match? Was that the match he had at the Dome show?
Yes.
Where he, you know, the jumping Styles clash off the rope.
Yep.
That was the finish. We knew it was over, done. And this felt the same way. You knew that ACH wasn't getting up after that. And I know you're right, Dylan. This is so refreshing compared to, like, say, I'd say AJ Styles for maybe 10 years ago, where he got caught up in all of those false finishes and overkill of, like, your finishers.
And you know what
it does? Do that anymore.
Is whenever they do decide to have somebody kick out of the Styles Clash, it's going to be so important.
It'll be huge. That's true.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And so, guys, up to this point, I'm having a fun time with this show. So refreshing after the, up to this point. Anyway, but let's do a quick break for the Place to Be Nation to get their stuff in. When we come back, we're going to talk about a surprise return. Not really a surprise, but, you know, for the show. And the three final matches. You're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real Touch Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Okay, welcome back to the Place to Be Nation. We're here reviewing the ROH 13th Anniversary Show. I'm here with my buddies Dave and Dylan from Wrestling Culture Podcast, and as always, Chris Zellner, who does the DVDVR Lucha Reports. And guys, we've already sped through most of the show. We're getting into the championship matches. First, we're going to go with the ROH World Tag Team Championship match, the Red Dragon versus the Young Bucks. And Dylan, thoughts?
I actually thought this was the best match on the show, which will probably surprise you, Will, because I think a lot of people, maybe yourself included, see me as somebody who's not a big fan of the crazy spot stuff. But I thought you sort of mentioned this, you know, before on the other side of the break, that this show, every match sort of felt different. And I think what makes a match like this is when it's not a card full of matches like this. And they were the way this was worked. First of all, the Young Bucks were baby faces. And again, I said this earlier, they were baby faces in not just in how the crowd reacted. They were baby faces in how the match was laid out.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt.
They were dealing with heel interference spots. You know, they were getting worked over, the ring cut off on them. Yeah, that was almost a formality in the sense that the bulk of the match occurred after the Bucks hot tag. But I did like the fact that they at least, you know, played on that theme, the sort of traditional tag match structure, rather than just completely abandoning it. To me, this match really worked because of the fact that while there were a ton of big spots, I feel like for the most part, every spot was sold reasonably well. And there were lengthy sections where both teams felt like they were in control or had the momentum of the match. You know, the people joke about the Bucks and the super kick and everything. I actually thought the way they used the super kick in this match was really good, because anytime they threw one out, it was like it was either building to another spot or it was a cutoff spot or something. Like I really liked the way that was done. There was a lot of, obviously there's going to be a lot of cool spots. The misdirection moonsault to the floor, the spot with the Hilo over Kyle O'Reilly while he had the other Buck in an arm bar. Like, there was a lot of, that's to be expected in a match like this. But I thought the pacing of this, while very frantic and, you know, obviously spotty, it really was, I thought, a good thing in the sense that it almost felt like one of those Michinoku Pro tags where, yeah, there was a lot of crazy stuff going on. Yes, it was basically a spot fest, but the way it was laid out and the way it was set up, everybody got time to shine without it feeling like they were blowing through stuff with nobody selling anything. You know, I guess you could make the argument that Kyle O'Reilly shouldn't have been back in the match after taking that tombstone on the floor, but he was out of it for a while, and in the modern context, it wasn't as egregious as a lot of the stuff I normally see. I had a minor problem with that, but it didn't kill the match for me. I just thought it was a really good match for this style of match, about as good a match as this is going to be. The only arguable negative I could see is the crowd really wanted the Bucks to win, and when Red Dragon won, I think it really just kind of sucked the juice out of the place. But it's not like they shouldn't have won. It's just it would have been, you know, the match might have been put over even more if the Bucks had come away with the win. But I really liked this match.
Yeah, I liked it too. But I liked the ACH AJ Styles match better.
I could see that. You know, I could totally see that.
I liked it. I thought there were a couple of dumb spots, like that double dragon screw leg whip. I thought was dumb. I thought it looked awkward. I mean, I saw what they were going for, but it's just like, come on. You know, and then the finish, I don't know, did they fuck up on the false three count?
I couldn't tell.
It did,
right? Yeah.
He had three.
So that kind of annoyed me. And so, like, little things like that, you know, whereas there was nothing like that going on. And there wasn't any of the shenanigans with the ref going on in that AJ Styles versus ACH match. You know, that was just two guys beating each other up with, you know, the veteran versus the up-and-comer. So that's why I put the other one up. Chris, I know you thought this was the match of the show. What else did you like about it?
Yeah, I mean, I went to this match expecting what I got. You know, I wanted nothing less than what I got. You know, I wasn't expecting, you know, long headlock sequences and drop toe holds and stuff like that. You know, I wanted – I wanted this to be a spot fest, and that's what it was. So I got, yeah, like I said, I got what I got bang for my buck, I guess
you could. Oh, no.
But, the super kick bonanza was fun. The Bucks are so damn charismatic, too. That's one thing about they are so good in their roles, and the fans love them, eating it up. I hated Shayna Baszler being ringside. I mean, that was just a total, like, fuck off, you know, having that UFC stench around the show. I mean, the fans did not like it, too, of course. And I don't think any of them probably knew who she
was. Now, hold on, Chris. I've got a proposal. I've got a proposal that would have made it awesome. How great would it have been if when she was begging off, you know, rather than the Bucks, you know, sort of chase her away or whatever, if Dave Meltzer had come out and made the save for the Young Bucks, their new best friend, Big Dave.
Yeah, but he's conflicted though because she's USC. So I mean,
he turns heel on the Bucks.
Yeah, he gets in the ring and his head just explodes like Scanners. But that's what the fans. I think the fans are more pissed off at that more than the fact that the Redragon won the match. You know, it was the fact that she was involved in like she was. You know, it was somebody that they haven't, you know, never introduced on television that she was going to be there or anything. It was just one of these things. She just shows up. It hurt the match in a lot of ways. But, yeah, Kyle O'Reilly's awesome. Let me go ahead and say that. That guy is so good. And Bobby Fish is really good, too. It's like Carino says, the youngest 38-year-old in wrestling. That's true. I mean, that dude's got it. But the indie taker on the floor, you know, Bucks hitting Chasing the Dragon, total spot fest. But I loved it.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm still sticking with AC. The more flaws y'all point out with this match, the more I move towards AJ well, Styles versus ACH. You know, Dave, what'd you think?
I thought this was the best match in the show, and it is a tough call for me with the AJ Styles and ACH match, but. You know, I did like the fact that that didn't have the shenanigans, but I don't know. The Bucks, like, you know, all their offense is the same as it's always been, but they're a great example of they do seem to keep getting better in terms of, you know, their presentation and their psychology, and they just feel like they're working at another level right now. And I thought they were amazing here, and Red Dragon is... probably their peak was at the end of last year, but they're still really going strong right now. And Kyle O'Reilly is a lot of fun. Shayna Baszler, she didn't add anything here. And other than that, I thought it was a great match, though. And I probably would have preferred to see the Bucks win the match, but they did do that last summer with them. So
I did like the line on Baszler that somebody tweeted out that they found somebody that was more masculine than ODB.
It's hilarious.
Terrible.
But, yeah, well, you know, besides the fact that you guys are a bunch of spot fest monkeys, it's fine.
And we also have Rocky Romero on commentary, and he announced
His mic that didn't work for the first
5 minutes. Yeah, his mic that didn't work for the first 5 minutes. Announcing that Trent Barretta is officially his tag partner, and they're going to be known as Roppongi Vice.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to remember that. All right. Anyway, all right. Well, so I think the show has peaked. No matter what happens after this, the show has peaked. But we still have two matches to go. Jay Lethal versus Alberto Patron. And, man, I miss Alberto in a ring. I thought he came out really nasty up until he gave, like, the laziest axe handle ever. But, you know, that's besides the point. He started off, I thought, really nasty. I was like, fuck yeah, Alberto. But then the match kind of settled down. And then Lethal picked it up with his three suicide dives. But, I don't know, man. I have more to say about the finish, but I want to let y'all guys get your thoughts in. Chris?
I thought this was a cold match in a lot of ways. Even with, you know, they built this match up on television and stuff, the fans were, you know, definitely burnt out, I guess, from the last match. And the heat wasn't there that much, I thought. Lethal did have a pretty good performance. Tope Mania. You know, we hit all his topes on Del Rio, which knocked him over into the crowd with Carino proudly proclaiming that he knocked him into a rotund member of the audience. Rotund. It was a great, great word to describe that man. But, yeah, and this is a match, you know, we talked about the tights earlier. you know, in the Kingdom and the Addiction, same color schemes here. Although, you know, it's different. You know, Lethal was wearing red and Del Rio's wearing black.
It was refreshing for Del Rio, though, man, not to be in a Mexican flag.
Yeah. But it was like, it's, yeah, the color schemes were just too identical, though. I mean, like I said, it wasn't as bad as the other match, but a little something different.
Let me ask you this here, Dylan. I don't know. You watch ROH a lot. Is Jay Lethal even any good? Because, like, I asked that because I know when I saw him live a couple of years ago, I remember liking him back in, like, 2005, like, when he was, like, Samoa Joe's little buddy.
Yep.
But, God, like, he put me – legitimately, him and Roddy Strong put me to sleep live while I'm sitting there around 2,000 people.
Let me tell you this flat out, okay? Jay Lethal's been, you know, maybe the worst match I've ever seen versus Eddie Edwards. I am not a Jay Lethal guy at all. I think he's peaked years ago. I agree with you, Will. I think he peaked around 2005, 2006. He's done some – I do think he's a good promo, or at least he can be a good promo. But what I will say in defense here of Jay Lethal is – I think Ring of Honor's done a very good job booking him in the sense of he's this guy who believes his title is the top title, and as a result, it has made that belt feel more important, and it's made him feel relevant again. I still don't think his work is all that good, but I think the way they presented him is very strong, and I think he's done pretty well as a character in that in terms of that presentation. As a worker, he's well down the list of people in that promotion I want to see in the ring. I mean, well down. Now, you know, he's above BJ Whitmer, but not too much. Not too many other people are down there with him. But in terms of his overall character presentation, I think it's attitude. You know, I liked the match. I thought the match was, I'd describe it as pretty good. It wasn't great. I thought they did a good job of balancing the spot stuff that sort of is expected to some degree by the ROH faithful with the more tempered, you know, stuff that you need so that the spots matter. There was two things that I think hurt the match. The first thing that hurt it was the positioning on the show. I understand why they positioned it here, because they've tried to portray, you know, Patron's this big star theory, and they've tried to portray Lethal as basically a co-equal or close to it with Briscoe in terms of the title. But there's no way this should have gone on after Styles and ACH and that tag match. No way in hell. That was just a bad decision.
Right, right.
The other thing that hurt it was the finish, which I did not think was that bad, to be honest. But the execution of some of the stuff and the camera shots especially, I thought were poor.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't even know if it was the execution so much as the camera spots. And it really hurt what they were going for, which is too bad, because ultimately the right thing happened. Patron lost. Yeah, it wasn't clean, but he lost. And the guy that you've been trying to build up is, you know, this champion with a belt that he thinks is superior or equal to the world title won. So ultimately the result was right, but they sort of flubbed it at the very end, which is too bad, because I actually thought it was a pretty good match. It was better than I expected. I actually thought this had potential to be pretty bad. And in the end, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought the match was okay. I think that, like I said, like Lethal, like I'm automatically bored. I don't know, you know, when I see him. And then, like, you know, we talked earlier about the AJ match where there was never any doubt who's going to win. Well, you knew since Alberto's only going to work a certain amount of dates that they weren't going to put the title on him. So you knew he was going to lose, so you knew there was going to have to be some kind of shenanigans for him to lose the match.
That's a fair point.
You know what and I mean? Like, yeah, I knew they used that the book.
Yeah, the book was a cute way of using it.
Yeah, they used it. They used it a couple of times, you know, over and over again to kind of hammer the point home. It just, to me, that I think knowing, like, you know, once they used the book the first time and he kicked out, well, I knew that something else was going to happen, so I knew there was going to be more ref interference. To me, that felt more Attitude Era / you know, WWE-like than anything. Like, I knew that they'd kind of booked themselves in a corner with the matchup, if that makes sense.
No, that's a perfectly fair point. And, you know, in an ideal world, I would have preferred Lethal go over clean. But that wasn't going to happen for two reasons. The first reason is Patron's not losing a Fall Clean in Ring of Honor. And the second reason is...
Nor should he, really. I mean, he's a bigger star than those guys.
And the second reason is that Lethal, really, for his character, I don't know that they necessarily want him beating a top guy like that clean either. So you knew it wasn't going to be a clean finish. But
I thought it was going to be DQ. I thought there was a chance of that, too.
Yeah. I thought there was a chance of that.
Dave, what do you think, bud?
Alberto is just – he's so great. And I really like the idea of having guys like him come in on a part-time basis because I don't know. It freshens them up to – freshens things up to have guys who don't have to have the card revolve around them in. Him doing the tope was really cool. Jay Lethal, I'm off and on how much I enjoy him. I do think they've done a good job of booking him as a heel champion for a guy that I don't really want to watch. But that being said, he kind of feels like an old territorial heel champion to me, like someone who would have had like if they would have had like a veteran, you know, babyface guy, you know, go with the TV title in Mid-Atlantic or something.
They're booking him as Tully Blanchard.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That being said, you know, like I guess what comes out of this is I really want to see Alberto versus Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor.
Which I don't think you're going to get. I don't think you're going to get that. But hey, that's too bad.
I don't know, man. San Antonio's coming up. Both of
you might get in Triple A.
Show.
That's true too.
If you get it, you get in Triple A. I think.
We'll see. I don't know. I was really excited when Pete told me that the San Antonio show is going to have Samoa Joe and Alberto on the same show. So I'm kind of, you know, we'll see what happens, man. You know, maybe they do that kind of once in a lifetime dream match for both guys since, you know, neither one of them is going to be working ROH permanently, right? Is Joe going to do kind of the more of the guest spot thing or is he doing the permanent thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, the rumor is that he's not taking dates after
April
23rd, and then of course that's an NXT taping day, and I believe Joe lives in Orlando, so there's a lot of speculation. I mean, I don't know what's going on there, but I would not be the least bit surprised to see him end up there.
Okay,
some people think that's a long shot. I actually don't think it's a long shot, but
I think it's certain.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk Joe. Hell, Joe comes out. Gets a bigger pop than the Alberto match.
Than the roster, other than Young Bucks.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, I don't know. That pop for ODB winning that match was pretty huge, too.
Fair enough.
But, I don't know. What do you think about Joe coming back, Dylan?
I mean, in theory, it should be great. And there is precedent. People, you know, for those people who say, well, it may not work out. Well, I mean, a lot of people didn't think AJ Styles was going to magically turn into one of the top guys on the planet when he left TNA either. The reality is that TNA is awful. It kills everybody. It kills their souls. It makes them hate their jobs. It makes them hate their life. These guys, a lot of these guys say this when they leave. So this isn't even me just speculating. I feel like Joe is – it's tough to say – because I mean, he cut a really good promo. I mean, I thought the promo was very strong, other than the fact that he really didn't mention any of the guys in the match by name, which I thought was kind of tacky. But the pro other than that,
you think he knew who they were?
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
the promo itself, I thought was good though. Strong, very strong promo. You know, I think he look. I know he can still have very good matches. Because, you know, I guess it was a year and a half ago, he had a really good match with Willie Mack, for example. Of course, it wasn't in TNA. It was on a championship wrestling for Hollywood or something like that. Some, it may not even been them, somebody. So I know he still physically can do it. The question is, can he do it consistently? And will people try and hold him to a standard that's unrealistic? And I think that could hurt. But if he's in there with the right guy, I absolutely think he can still perform at a top level. Maybe not what he was in 05 or 06, and you know, but still a reasonably high level. I really, you know, I'm looking forward to the Jay Briscoe match in theory, I'll get to why I'm not looking forward to it as much now, but you know, in theory, I'm looking forward to that match, which they're obviously going to do after tonight. But I don't know. I mean, the big thing that came out of this, you know, Joe coming back tonight and the reaction that he got, you know, it just sort of speaks to what we talked about, you know, these in past shows on, you know, these bigger promotions, in theory, these bigger promotions, the ones with national TV deals, a lot of these guys don't want to work for them anymore because being a freelancer or going out and doing your own thing or, you know, sometimes that maybe makes you more relevant. And in the case of Joe, it has. And I'm just at this point, I'm just praying that we can find a way to get Austin Aries out of TNA because that guy's too safe to him, there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shame that a guy as good as him
and keep Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards in TNA.
Yes.
We're set. Chris, now you think it's certain he's going to WWE?
Yeah, from what I've heard in rumblings, I think it's.
Wait, hold on. What rumblings?
People I talk to. Okay. I'm not going to reveal my sources.
Oh shit!
If you give me percentage wise, I'd go 85%.
Wow.
Okay. Right now, regarding with Joe and ROH situation, I think Jay Briscoe. Well, first off, the scenario should be anyway. Jay should have dropped the title tonight to somebody, and then they transition over to Moose, and then. You know, if you're going to do Samoa Joe for the title, Samoa Joe against Moose, putting over Moose would be, great for business and great for Moose, I think.
Too early for Moose, in my opinion. I want a slow burn with him. I get what you're saying, but I would rather them go the Rusev route and slowly continue with him.
Yeah, I mean, I could get behind that, but I think you need to, if you're going to use Joe and you know you're not going to have him, I think you need to have him put over somebody that needs it.
That's fair.
What are people's feelings on Hanson?
We'll get to him in a second. Let's hold off on Hanson. Dave, Samoa Joe.
Yeah, he just came off as awesome here. It feels a lot like in later day ECW when guys were coming back from, say, horrible runs in WCW. Like Sandman or Raven.
That's a great point. It absolutely did feel like that.
Hopefully it doesn't mean we're on the death's door with Ring of Honor like it did with ECW, but that's what it feels like as far as the guy's positioning on the cards. And you know, I haven't seen a match of his in a long while, but you know, he's one of my favorite guys ever, and I really think you can see him have a lot of great matches here, and it's awesome to have him in.
Okay. Well, since you brought him up, Dave, let's get to Hanson, okay? So Hanson versus Tommaso Ciampa versus Michael Elgin versus Jay Briscoe for the ROH World Championship. Oh, Christ. All right, Dave. I already know what Chris and Dylan are going to say. Any redeeming qualities of this match you want to point out?
Couple cool spots by Hanson. Otherwise, it was a bit of a clusterfuck.
I think that's the one word we could all use. If we wanted into this podcast right now, that's the word we use for that main event. Dylan.
I will say this. And I'm not particularly a big fan of either one of these guys, although I do think Elgin in his current role as sort of the douchey, almost chicken shit at times heel is the best he's been in years. But that razor's edge onto the barricade that he did to Ciampa, I mean, Ciampa, that looked absolutely terrifying.
Ugly. Like, yeah.
Horrible.
It could have fucking killed him.
Yeah.
And actually, I thought Elgin's reaction to it, I thought was almost perfect because he sort of kneeled down. Like, and all, it was almost like he was T-bowing for a moment. I thought that was a great reaction.
The sad thing is, that's what woke the crowd up to this match.
Well, he threw him like a T-bow pass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing about this one, too, okay? This match is another one that never had a shot because it had to come after the Joe thing, which arguably should have come after the match. But, look, I actually had – if you'd asked me a week ago, I would have said this match probably not going to be any good. But I got my hopes up a little bit because I did watch the Atlanta ROH show. And they had a six-way on that show that was very good. And I thought, well, shit, if they were able to do it on that show, they might be able to do it on this show. And let me tell you, this was this was just an absolute disaster of a match. I mean, I look, I guess in theory, there are things you could sort of pull out that make sense. Like, you know, it makes sense that Todd Sinclair was on his ass for a while because he actually did take a good ref bump, for example. But then the question becomes, why the fuck didn't another ref come out? You know, like why did it take 10 minutes or however how long it was? You know, I mean, it makes sense, for example, that they were trying to protect Hansen because they've invested a lot of time in trying to build this guy up as a single star. But why would you do that at the expense of your world champion who you're then going to turn around and put in a friggin' feud with the returning Samoa Joe? It was fucking moronic. Like, to have Jay Briscoe, who they've portrayed, who is, in my opinion, one of the most authentic badasses in wrestling today, the best promo in wrestling, the single best promo in wrestling is Jay Briscoe. He's a very good worker, you know, and he's got an aura about him that very few guys on the independent scene do. He's been well protected, hadn't taken a fall in 2 years. And to have him win a match on fluky bullshit after a complete Russo, sub-Russo, worse than Vince Russo level bullshit garbage booking scenario like that. I mean, this is fucking horrific. Like, I couldn't believe they were going to build to Jay Briscoe versus Samoa Joe, which has a history too, I might add, a good history that you can play off of. You're going to try and set that shit up with this fucking disastrous booking display. I mean, a complete nightmare. Whoever was Delirious wrote that, he needs to be dragged out back and shot. That was dog shit. I mean, like, I can't – that was as bad as the Royal Rumble. It was as bad – I mean, it wasn't as bad because the scope wasn't as big. You know, and Daniel Bryan is way more over than Jay Briscoe is, way more over than anybody really. But in terms of damaging a top star for no reason, or at least – I mean, nobody came out of this looking better. I mean, I guess you could say Hansen in the sense that he was kind of protected. But did you come away from this match thinking, well, at least they protected Hansen? No. You came away from this match thinking, why the fuck did they book this way? It was just, it was complete shit. Complete shit. No redeeming quality. Some of the guys tried. They had some decent spots in there, and I kind of felt bad for them because it wasn't like any individual performer in this match was awful or anything. It's just they were left to die on the vine by terrible booking.
By bad booking, yep. Chris?
Yeah, it's just total fucking bullshit. I mean, as soon as the ref bump happened, you know, that's when the whole match just totally went careening down the hill. And then you had KRD coming out there attacking Hansen. And then Ray Rowe just coming out of nowhere, you know.
Running and doing nothing.
And getting nothing. Zero response.
Yeah, zero heat from the crowd. It's like, oh, okay, that just happened. Then you get Nigel involved. And, I mean, it was a nice touch that Ciampa saved Nigel after all the stuff that was been going on between those two. But you're like, oh, shit. You know, why they're going to go for this whole deal with Nigel? You know, we talk about BJ Whitmer's situation. Nigel definitely doesn't need to be doing anything physical in the ring. So you know, you had that going on. Then, I mean, just everything that was going on after that is total insanity. And it makes you wonder, why is Ring of Honor doing this? I mean, this isn't – I mean, do they want to be like TNA? I mean, really, I mean, this is
– Who's it targeted for?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Why did Dixie Carter and John Gaberick just immediately just take over the production, you know, in this match? I just could not believe what I was watching out there. And after coming off a show last week in Atlanta, which I've hyped so much, and it was such a good show, and everything was, you know, almost perfectly booked in a lot of ways, to see this in your main event of a show that, you know, is a pretty big show. It's an anniversary show, $45, you know, for HD, and you throw this out there. I mean, it's fucking mind-boggling how they thought that this would work. You had Jay Briscoe, the guy who's, you know, the baddest-ass man on the roster, just about basically have a banana peel finish. Just, oh, he just happens to fall on the guy. Oh, I could not believe what I was watching, and I was so pissed off.
They had built it up the entire time how Jay Briscoe hasn't been pinned in like a year and a half. And
2 years.
Two years, whatever it's been. But like it just like, you know, they really, we talked about the Royal Rumble briefly, Dylan. It's almost like they wanted to hurt their own world championship.
I agree. I mean, what other conclusion could you draw? I mean, what other possible conclusion could you draw from the booking of that other than they were trying to hurt the world championship and the title holder himself? There's no other. I mean, it was, I mean, because Jay didn't, it's not like Jay did a bunch of stuff in the match, you know. I mean, the other three guys got way more offense and big spots in than him, too. It was so bad. I really can't even believe how bad it was. Because Ring of Honor has been so good about booking, generally speaking, over the last, I'd say, 18 months, that it's mind blowing. Like it came out of nowhere. I mean, even though I'll admit, like I said a week ago, I didn't have high hopes for the quality of the match. I certainly didn't expect it to be that nightmarish in terms of booking. I didn't think there was any way that it could have been that bad, you know. And the real shame of it is, it took a pay-per-view that, while not a great pay-per-view, I think was pretty clearly a good, maybe even borderline very good pay-per-view. And I'm not saying that I think it was a bad show, but it really leaves you with a terrible taste in your mouth coming out.
That it absolutely.
You know? Totally.
Well, because I would still, on the strength of everything leading up to this match, I would give this show a thumbs up. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I agree. I mean, I have
especially if you're kind of like not, because like, I really haven't been following ROH probably since 2008, like on a regular basis. And it was on the strength of Chris's Atlanta hype and the positive reviews coming out of the Atlanta show and the fact that I wanted to get hyped up for the San Antonio show next month that I was like, okay, I'm gonna take a chance on this. And that main event threw me for a loop, like, oh man, that was TNA level bad for me.
I want to hope that this is the exception to the rule. I want to hope that this was just a one time deal, that they don't start doing this more often, because I mean that was just ridiculous. If WWE had done some shit like that, the internet would be exploding right now, basically.
Oh, it no would. Question. I mean, like, what's really. What makes it even worse, and don't get me wrong, I thought the way they booked the Moose Mark Briscoe match was basically exactly how it should have been booked. But the Briscoes are overall, in my opinion, the best act in wrestling right now. They're great as a tag team. They're great on promos. They're great vignettes. They come across as big stars there, And coming out of the show, you got Mark losing to Moose, which was the right decision, but it was a very definitive finish. And Jay Briscoe looking like a fucking putz winning his match. I mean. It
makes you think, like, man, are the Briscoes the guys who are going to get signed to WWE next?
I would love to see that. Don't get me wrong, but it may. Well, I don't know. I mean, I hope there's nobody on the planet who would try and justify that fucking match. Like, I just can't get over how stupid it was. Like, it wasn't even.
I think it's an example of being afraid to put anyone over.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, you might be right. They may have booked themselves into a corner. They thought that they couldn't.
Job Elgin. I mean, God. I mean, that's the obvious guy who should have jobbed, I thought, was Elgin.
It's just there's no. Well, first of all, it shouldn't have been a four-way to begin with, in my opinion. But if you're gonna book, look. Let's talk about the elephant in the room with this show, too, since we've all sort of hinted at it and maybe even alluded to it more directly. The order of the matches on this show was a disaster. Like, yes. Whoever laid the order, like,
up until that AJ match. Because remember, I even said it.
Oh, sure. The first half, I agree with you. The first half was set up perfectly. I mean, I guess you could have rearranged it some way or another, but it was perfectly fine the way they set it up. But the second half of this show, I mean, it's like they set up – look, that main event, the way it was booked, was going to fail anyway. But they set it up to fail as well. And they set up Lethal and Alberto to fail. And I don't get it. I don't understand what they were thinking with the layout of this show, especially because this is, it's not like, here's the other thing that's worth mentioning. This show was in Vegas. That's not even an ROH town. What sense is it running a fucking pay-per-view in Las Vegas when it's not an ROH town? I thought that hurt the show a little bit.
Right.
You know, like, you know, I get that they wanted to go outside the box a little bit, but why do that for one of your few pay-per-views?
No, I agree. Like, I think the San Antonio show is not a pay-per-view. Why not do it in San Antonio, which is an ROH town and has drawn huge crowds there last few times out, you know?
Do they even have TV in Vegas? See, I don't even know if they have TV in Vegas.
I'm sure they do.
Kind of like late 80s Crockett Logic, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I don't,
not as bad on a big scale as that was, but yeah, the sentiment was there, definitely.
So anyway, guys, let's go for this. Zellner, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Oh, Jesus. Can I do thumbs up before the main event? Can I just do that? And then the main
come
event.
Come on, overall. The main event. Come on, don't be a pussy.
The thumbs main up event. Or
thumbs down.
Total thumbs down on that. So overall, it's such a thumbs down in the main event, it drags the rest of the show into a thumbs down.
Wow. Okay. What about you, Dave?
I'd say thumbs up. I mean, the matches that I liked a lot were really, really good. I mean, it doesn't come off as an important match in ROH history, which I guess you kind of hoped it would have. But yeah, I'd still go thumbs up. I'm glad it was worth my money.
Okay. Dylan?
I mean, it's a thumbs up, very slightly, borderline thumbs in the middle. I'll go thumbs up because of the fact that, generally speaking, I enjoyed 85% of the show.
Yeah.
How
many WWE shows have we seen where we only enjoy 20%, you know, like Rumble?
What puts this over the top and allows me to justify having it, you know, in that category is really the back to back run with Styles, the Styles match and the Bucks Red Dragon match. You know, if one of those matches is even slightly worse than it is, I'd probably go thumbs in the middle on this. I'll go slight thumbs up. But having said that, I can't see myself buying another Ring of Honor pay-per-view after that main event. I mean, they'd have to put forward a really compelling lineup. I don't think I would
if it had one of those multi-man.
Oh, absolutely events. Not. You know, yeah, I mean, it would.
I think
have
that hurt
really
it too.
Name.
I think once I saw it was a four-way, I'm not a big fan of ROH four-way matches or three-way matches or six-man matches. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I kind of had a feeling that was going to be an issue anyway, you know, with the four men in there, you know, and I would want a big singles match where they do treat it like kind of like a big New Japan main event or something.
And speaking of New Japan, isn't that the next pay-per-view going to have New Japan on there? Isn't that part of it?
They're not doing the Toronto shows from, they're not doing them on this kind of pay-per-view. It's supposed to be doing IPPVs.
I thought War of the Worlds, isn't that the next pay-per-view? Is it? In the
World Wars
from New York, so I'm thinking that's one of the New Japan shows. I could be wrong, but I'm thinking I saw
best in the world. Is that supposed to have New Japan guys?
Something like that.
That's in June. The big New Japan shows are the ones in May and Philly and Toronto.
Okay, yeah, June 19th is pay per view. So, and who knows what they'll run? You know, like I said, there's 3 months until then. But yeah, you put a gun in my head right now. I wouldn't buy it.
Yeah, like I said, to me the main event would be the lineup. You know, tonight's lineup, based off the Atlanta reviews, to me looked promising. So.
The Atlanta show was way better.
Yeah, that's inarguable.
Yeah, and I think the way these shows are coming down, like they're due for a match of the year contender to pop out of one of these shows. You know, so. Hopefully we'll get that too. So I'm going to go thumbs up. But Chris, you're right, man. That main event sucks so bad.
I know. I want to go thumbs up so bad, but that main event was just, it was a soul killer.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty, I mean, nobody can defend that. Johnny Cyro couldn't defend that.
I think he probably would have found a way.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wasn't quite hard enough on it in the feedback I sent into the Observer, but I was not a fan of it, you know.
Well, I think part of it, too, is, you know, first of all, Musgrave is the Johnny Sorrow of ROH, but setting that aside, but more seriously, all joking aside, ROH has built up at least a fair amount of goodwill with, I think, certainly me, Dave, and Chris. So I'm willing to cut them a little bit more slack than I would the WWE on some shit like that, just because this feels like an aberration. It feels like something that's not the norm for them right now. But, you know, that's why that's another reason I'm kind of willing to go thumbs up despite that disgraceful main event. But going thumbs up and spending $35 are not the same thing. You know, and spending $35 on a future show, in theory, I agree with you, Will. It depends on the lineup. But, man, that leaves a bad taste in my mouth. You know, I just
They really got to deliver when they're doing something like when they're doing traditional pay-per-view.
Yes, absolutely. More so than anything else, they got to deliver when they're doing traditional pay-per-view, because you're talking about people spending real money, substantial money, you know, for a product that so that they can watch in real time and come away thinking that not only have they earned their money, but that Ring of Honor is a hot promotion. And up until I'd say for the most part, up until, you know, that main event, especially with the Joe thing directly preceding it, that's how it felt. But man, that main event just, I mean, will anybody be talking about the undercard on this show in the aftermath? Maybe the Bucks match and maybe even Joe returning. But I think the big focus coming out is going to be how much of a clusterfuck that main event was.
Well, and those two great matches weren't match of the year matches. And no, they weren't title changes. So they don't really that's have that kind of thing that you hold on to.
I think that the two things that are coming out of this show is, you know, the abortion of the main event and the fact that, you know, you had the whole thing with the botched three count and Baszler getting involved in the tag title match. So two screw job deals is what's going to get mentioned as the two talking points from this show.
So you don't think AJ versus ACH gets any love?
I tell you, AJ versus HH should get it, but it's overshadowed.
It could be a top 10 match of the year so far, but I don't think by the end of the year it will be.
No, there's been a lot of good stuff that's happened this year too. So that's not a knock on that match. It just,
no,
you know, I just,
and like we talked about, it wasn't designed to be a match of the year. So
no,
it was great for what it was. And again, you know, I was saying that they should be modeling themselves after the classic, you know, Samoa Joe title defenses and Danielson, but they should also be modeling themselves off of New Japan, who they're partners with.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, that's true. You know, I mean, that's absolutely true.
Okay. Well, let's go, Chris.
Del Rio. Alberto and Lethal, the car placement, definitely, you know, we talked about that, killed them. If they put that match in the, like in between the Roderick Strong match and the ODB match, I thought that would have been a perfect spot for that match.
Agree. The show, there was a lot of production and layout decisions that weren't very smart. I think that's a good way to encapsulate the flaws of this show. And I think a good way to encapsulate the strengths would be to say that there were quite a few guys who I do think came out looking better than they did going in. It's just none of those guys were in the main event.
What do you guys think should happen with the world title going forward?
No more multi-man matches.
It's gonna be Briscoe and Joe. It's just a question of where they're gonna run it.
I mean, that match is gonna happen. Jay's gonna retain it. I mean, it looked to me coming out of the Atlanta show like they were setting up Mike Bennett for a potential challenge to Jay.
It's logical.
Which I would be fine with, but I don't know if we're gonna get it. You know, I thought for some time that Cedric Alexander would be a great choice to take the belt off Jay if it was done the right way. The problem is they've got him slated on the card right now. It would take a long time to get to that point.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to the idea of Moose being the guy who takes the belt off of him. I just think it's going to need more of a build. I think that's going to need a few more months. But I'm not in any hurry to take the belt off of Briscoe either. I just think, you know.
But if he's going to have it, he needs to have some classic title matches and not this.
Yes, absolutely. They got to put him in a position where he can do what he can do, you know. And
Hold on. How many Match of the Year contenders has he been a part of since having the belt?
None. Not as a singles. I thought the Briscoes were the best tag team in wrestling last year, you know. And I think their matches I've seen this year, actually, if you count RHTV, have all been really good. That's sort of the weird thing they got going on with him. That's why the Lethal title, the way it's been presented, I think is so interesting. Is Jay's he's the world champion, but he's almost a part-time world champion because he wrestles in tags with his brother as much or more as he wrestles for that title. So it's a different now. Some people might consider that a weakness. I actually have no problem with that, as long as the fucking title matches that we get don't suck.
Yeah. And if they're gonna do the whole thing where he hasn't been pinned in 2 years, it should be because he's Flair, not Brock Lesnar.
And a guy that we haven't talked about that, you know, is right now pretty much in limbo, I think, is Ciampa. You know, he was way over in Atlanta. The fans are into him.
Yep.
You know, his gimmick has worked. You know, he's distinctive in what he does. And I thought
Carino put him over really well on commentary tonight.
I thought he was going to win the title tonight. I said it going in. That's who I was picking to win. And the way he looked, at, you know, he's the one that got pinned and all that garbage. And it just totally made him look weak. And where do you go with him now? Do you keep him and Elgin feuding against each other? Nobody wants to see Elgin. So, I mean, you got to do something with him. You know, he definitely went downhill this match.
I was ready for Hansen to get the title as well. But
oh, I didn't want him to get it, man.
They did some damage to him tonight.
I hate his tights.
That reminds me of my brother Drew, the only non-wrestling fan of the four of us. You know, his infamous years ago, we were watching the NFL, and Torrey Holt came on the screen, the old Rams receiver, and he just recoiled and went into a bipolar rage. And, you know, I asked him what the problem was, and he just, I just fucking Torrey Holt. I just hate the way he looks. It's very, very similar.
Hey, that's with me and Russell Westbrook right now, too, man. That guy's one of the greatest guys, players on the planet. Just hate the way he looks. Looks like an asshole. Sorry.
Well, so, basically, what they got Hansen, though, he looks like Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds, like in like one of those competition deals they have, one of those parties, you know, where he has the trophy on his head, you know, whatever, like that. That's what he looks like.
I wish he'd go with the Ogre gimmick. It might be more appealing than the Barbarian.
I like his matches, but he looks like a Ring of Honor fan if he almost got in shape.
and then he cuts a promo, and you're like, what? This voice does not match this man.
That's funny.
I think that, it sounds real slow and real calm.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up, guys. Guys, wrestling culture, ever going to have a new podcast?
We'll have a new one. It's been crazy. I've got crazy shit going on, but we'll have a new one hopefully soon.
I got some ideas, which is our famous line, but I have one in particular right now.
Okay. Zellner, Lucha Report go up today?
Just went up about an hour ago.
Okay, cool. Make sure everybody checks that out. I know my buddy Pete, he's going to be back for the next reaction show. So I'm hoping that we can get a show or two in before WrestleMania. What, any shows coming up before then that'd be worth doing a reaction for?
Really? No, there's no shows, actually.
Nothing? Right. Nothing from New Japan? Nothing?
New Japan Cup shows are coming up.
NXT? Nothing?
Nothing.
No, NXT doesn't run a big show again until I think late spring.
Man, what's going to save me?
I tell you what, we can you know what we can do? Well, we can fantasy book who should have been Carl Anderson's partner. You know, Jesse Hernandez, Buddha Khan,
Dennis Pitbull Spike 2.
Nick Diaz, what's he doing? He can't fight. You know,
right. I'm just getting, man.
How about I still think, I mentioned him earlier, Dave Meltzer might have been the best pick.
That would have been awesome.
With his Bullet Club loyalties, Big Dave might have been the best possible Carl Anderson partner.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a pretty buff guy, too, man. So, hey, that's a good one. Anyway, for the guys, we're going to sign off. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back, at least for a WrestleMania reaction. If anything happens between then and Mania, we'll pop up then. But until then, bye-bye.